after missing a podium a year ago, Canada will come home with gold.
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. 8:15 here on a rainy Tuesday morning. JR, Simmer, Hammer, Pierre McGuire standing by, and you're going, why are they playing World Junior Hockey Championship clips in the middle of October? Well, that's probably going to be the next hockey on the docket, save for, I guess, what's happened over in Gatineau with the Olympic, hoping to get back on the ice here in the very near future, but not a lot of hockey going on, and the NHL on pause for now, maybe January 1st, in all likelihood, probably later in January, if not February, for a start of a new season, so in terms of high-level hockey, World Juniors is the next thing on the docket. They announced the schedule yesterday. Canada will play Germany in its opening game on Boxing Day, and the tournament is actually going to start on Christmas Day for the first time in 15 years because they're holding it all in one venue at the in the bubble in Edmonton. And so just to be able to get all the games in, not spread over two separate ice surfaces, they needed to add a day. So Christmas Day, there you go, or Christmas Day, hockey, triple header for you.
Well, that Eat one right there, Dale Hunter kind of doing like John Muckler. He forgot Muck's like, who is that guy on the bench? Oh, that's Peter Klim. He hasn't played in hours, so let's put him out there. You put Thomas out, he scores, that's exciting. And my prediction, and again, it's okay, and I know you like your goalie philosophy about have a bunch of them. Askarov, start to finish, gold medal, MVP, lock it down. Lock it down there.
Tape that, Hammer, tape that. Simmer's got the Russians winning the gold medal. Let's bring in Pierre McGuire. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How you doing this morning, Pierre?
Yeah, and Spencer Knight start to finish.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, that's it. And we know you're now American, Pierre. We are not Canadian. We just want to get that on record.
I didn't know you were Russian.
good point by you, Pierre. And by the way, Russia-USA is the very first game in primetime on Christmas night. You want something to look forward to.
Yes, I'll be watching with wide eyes and a bushy tail.
There you go.
All that being said, you know, the World Junior is always an exciting thing. I know it's probably a little bit larger on the Canadian side of the border anyways, but I would just tell you that it's starting to grow in the United States as well. And, you know, people have tried to grow the brand down here, the World Junior brand, different people on the air or whatever, and people realize just how good the tournament is and how great the players are. I think it's one of the real special moments of the hockey season. I really do.
Well, I know when TSN has a half-hour special, when they unveil the schedule like they did last night, that's when they start doing that, Pierre, on the NBC Sports Network or something like that, then we'll know it's really hit. But on
can I just interrupt you there? NBC has tried to actually get the brand. And, you know, it's been purchased by the NHL Network. So NBC's actually tried to buy it. So just so you're aware. So I think that's an important thing for people to understand. The people, the hockey decision makers at NBC really understand the relevance of the tournament. And they really, if you study what TSN did over time to build the brand of the tournament, the one thing they did that was just so smart, and this went back to Keith Pelley and Rick Chisholm and now, you know, Paul Graham and Stu Johnson and Mark Milliere when he was at it, is they sell stars. They show the people the road these young players took to get to where they are and how that will affect the future of hockey at the NHL level. And I think it was really a smart branding decision and how they do it, and they spent tons of time and money doing it. But you got to give a lot of credit to the people at TSN. They're the ones that built this tournament. They really are.
Went to my first one attending to scout in 96, and I was actually embarrassed for the US, Pierre. That was in Boston. I remember Chris Drury and that group showed up at the end of the tournament in blue jeans. They looked like a ragged bunch. But USA Hockey, more importantly, boy, with the development programs, they've created a ton of pride for the athletes where it's a big deal now to play in it, which, you know, for the people, hey, it's never going to be like it is in Canada, but that's been really important, right?
One of the best sound bites ever, because I think it really got everybody's attention, including USA Hockey, was that tournament you're alluding to that was in Worcester and Boston and Springfield, Massachusetts. The coach for the American team was a legendary coach, Jack Parker, out of Boston University. And at the end of the tournament, he said, I had no idea how big this tournament was before he got involved. I mean, that just shows you how times have changed. And I think USA Hockey saw that, and they said, whoa, this is a legendary coach. It really wasn't up to speed in terms of understanding the power of the tournament. And they started to change. And I can tell you, I'll never forget this, when I started doing the tournament with Gord Miller back in 2003 in Halifax, how big it became for the Americans, that New Year's Eve game. between Canada and the United States was just a gigantic moment for them. And, you know, they had players like Ryan Suter and Zach Parise and Christopher Higgins back in those days. And those players felt that was their gold medal game if they could beat Canada in Canada. And it just took off from there. And then the next year, Mike Eaves and John Hines were coaching the team. And it's the first time the Americans ever won was 2004 in Helsinki against Canada. And that was Marc-Andre Fleury. And that was a super team for Canada. They were all young, too. And then the next year, they just went on to steamroll everybody in 2005 in Grand Forks.
For the sake of discussion, let's say that NHL training camps are not set to begin until after the World Juniors is over. Bob McKenzie was saying last night that he, at this point, he doesn't believe that Alexi Lafreniere would suit up for Canada, kind of have been there, done that, been there for 2 years. And also the three guys that played full-time in the NHL last year, Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko, and Kirby Dach, would also probably not play. What do you think about that philosophy of NHL teams, and Lafreniere aside, of kind of going, well, you're an NHL player now. You don't belong at the World Juniors anymore. What do you think about that?
I totally understand and back Bob on that. I think that if you're Tommy Fitzgerald, the new general manager in New Jersey, you need Hughes focused in on an NHL season. What happens with the World Junior, more times than not, especially when it's played on foreign soil, and I'm not saying Canada and U.S., that's foreign. So I'm talking about when it's in Europe with a huge time zone travel. Players come back from that event, and they're usually 2 or 3 weeks behind. They're just out of gas mentally and physically. If you're New Jersey and you're Tommy Fitzgerald and you want to get out of the gate quickly, you don't want your player playing at the World Junior if he's going to be one of your top two centers, because it's going to take a huge amount of time. And I have to believe, even though I know the league saying they want to play an 82-game schedule, I still think that that's a reach. I think a lot of people in the business think that's a reach. And so you're probably going to have a sprint to the finish line, and you need all hands on deck. So if you have upper echelon players that are young, like Hughes, like Kaapo Kakko, like Alexis Lafreniere, you're going to want those guys fresh and ready to play. So I would say, with all due respect to the World Junior, those guys don't really need that at this time in their development.
Yeah, and Pierre, and most times I agree with you, in a system of, first of all, Kakko and Hughes, I think Kakko had a terrible year. Hughes pretty darn close. After sitting out almost a year of hockey, I think it would be absolutely ridiculous to have them stay home and practice and not send them where, hey, go play against the best of your peer group, come out of there with some confidence and get rocking and rolling. And I'd say the same thing for Byfield.
Well, we didn't mention Byfield.
But do you know what I mean with those two guys? Yeah. Wouldn't you handle it that way with Kakko and Hughes?
I personally would not, and reason why I'm saying that is because it's a different thing. I think for Kakko, there's going to be internal competition for him with Lafreniere. He's always going to be compared to him.
Yeah.
And I think mentally that's going to be a big hurdle for him to have to get over. And him going to play at the World Junior, I don't know if that's going to help him do that. I think being in the group, which is his current peer group, NHL players, I think is better. I totally understand your point, and in any other year, I would say that's probably relevant. But if it's going to be a drag race to finish, and you're going to lose a player for 2 to 3 weeks mentally and physically just because of the fatigue factor, I'm not sure that's the best thing for them.
Yeah, hey, everyone decides different. I think those groups are very pro-American, so they're trying to hurt Canada. But anyways, different story. but Pierre, what? under the hood, though, was there some real disappointment in Kakko last year? Because it wasn't talked about a lot, but I got the sense that they were kind of a little disappointed with not only his play, but I kept hearing that word that he was very stubborn as a teenager last year.
I don't know about stubborn. I think frustrated. I think frustrated just because the results weren't there out of the gate, and I think frustrated that it's a little bit like, I can tell you, when we had Jaromir Jagr as a group in Pittsburgh, even though he had a great rookie year, there was frustration. He's not used to not being on the number one power play. He's not used to not being on the number one line. You know, guys like Mark Recchi and Kevin Stevens were playing ahead of him, and you can understand why if you were coaching or part of the management team, but if you're a player at 18, you don't understand, and that's one of the reasons why, just to put it into perspective on Sean's point, which is a valid one, we had to trade for Yuri Herdina to Calgary. We made a deal with Calgary to get Yuri Herdina so he could explain to Jaromir Jagr the rules of the road in the NHL. And one of the players that Jaromir grew up really respecting was Yuri Herdina. That's why we did it. And it really helped. And eventually you just saw Jaromir surge. And I think Kaapo Kakko the second half of the year got better, and he deserves credit for that. But there are other parts to him that I don't think get enough attention. He's got health issues. You know, he's got celiac disease. He's got eating issues that he has to adjust to. And I think that's a big jump for an 18-year-old to have to go not only from a different country but come to Manhattan, play for a Rangers team that's really starting to build, and I think it's going to be elite, but also have to deal with health issues that I don't think got nearly as much attention as maybe they should have going into the draft.
Timmy Stützle is unsigned. We'll assume that he's signed by the Sens by then. Now, he played last year for Germany. Do you think that he should go play at the World Juniors?
No, I think I don't know if he will. I don't know if his representatives would want that. I don't know if Ottawa
If he's signed by Ottawa at that stage.
If he's signed by Ottawa, yes. I wouldn't do that. I want him playing in Ottawa. I just think he's an NHL player. I said that. I'm not going to change. I think he's a ready-made NHL player. I think Ottawa did very well. I think I'm going to say it again, not because I'm on Ottawa radio. I say it in Toronto. I say it in Montreal. I say it all over NHL. I think Ottawa stole the draft day, and they deserve a ton of credit for it, and Stützle was a big part of it.
Wouldn't, though, Stützle, and I know you've also mentioned in the past, I'll leave out the other guys that have played in the NHL, yeah. But in the case of he and Byfield, neither has dominated a World Junior, mentioned many times, and I know time-wise, if a training camp's already open, it's a decision, but if training camp's not open until the new year, Pierre, wouldn't you want both of those guys to go there and dominate and feel like, you know what, I played myself out of my peer group and then headed into training camp?
That's a very fair question and a really good point. On Byfield, I would say yes. On Stützle, I would say no. Byfield's played junior hockey and done very well, obviously, with Sudbury in the OHL, but at the World Junior level last year, I think even he would admit was disappointing. But that sometimes it's such a fast tournament, Sean, as you know. Yeah. If it starts to roll downhill on you in a hurry, it's hard to get it back uphill. It really is. So I think that's one of the things. But I could see if Los Angeles wanted to do that, that'd be great. But I think in Ottawa's case, with Stützle, he has gone to a World Junior. He's done pretty darn well at a World Junior. I don't know what more there is. But again, not everybody's got their own opinion on it. I think if he's a signed player, you'd want him in camp.
Pierre, I saw a theory for it, and you were at the tournament in 2005 when all the players were there because of the NHL lockout, and that 2003 draft is, if not the deepest draft, first round in NHL history, pretty darn close. That part of the reason that that draft class has ended up doing so well over the years is that none of those players ended up getting hurried into the National Hockey League ahead of schedule. They Patrice Bergeron aside played as an 18-year-old, but by and large, they developed kind of on a regular curve. Is there anything to that, or was that 03 group just a special group?
No, there's a lot to that. And I think the biggest thing, again, is they didn't get rushed in. One of the interesting parts of that World Junior selection was watching different players elevate in Winnipeg, where a training camp was, and then all of a sudden, on the last day, Corey Perry's touch and go to make the team, and Wayne Gretzky's aware of it, and it just shows you just how important it was for a player like that. Gretzky called up Gord Miller and asked Gord to give the phone to Corey Perry. And Corey came up into the stands and talked to Gretzky. And he said, your job is to score. It's not to do anything else. Go out there and score, and you're going to make the team. And I think he might have had two or three goals in that last pre-tournament game. And he made the team, and he played on a line with Bergeron and Crosby. And that line was phenomenal. But my point is on this whole thing, those guys weren't rushed. Who knows? If Corey Perry and Anaheim is playing, maybe Getzlaff and Perry are playing in Anaheim, and they're not playing World Junior, and they don't turn out to be as good as everybody wanted them to be. So I think that extra time, it helped a player like Dion Phaneuf. It definitely helped a player like Shea Weber. You can go down the line. It helped Mike Richards a ton. It helped Jeff Carter a ton. Guys were part of that team. I mean, so I would say that there is a lot. And by the way, that philosophy, I think, was created one night very late with Bob, Gord, myself, Kevin Lowe, Wayne Gretzky in Grand Forks. So, yeah, that philosophy was created late night after a game.
Yeah, and also, too, that year, I think even a little bit more confirmation, Pierre, would have been the group that played the American League for that full year. Guys not going up and down. Guys not wondering when they're being called up. And I remember one of the first things I said in Toronto, boy, we should take Pominville on waivers. I remember watching him and Vanek and Roy play together. And how many lines and goalies and combinations played that full year in the AHL that went on to have real nice careers as well?
I totally agree. And that's such a valid point. And again, you look at that when Pominville and Vanek and Roy came up and played in Buffalo for Lindy Ruff, they were a ready-made line because of the time they spent in the American Hockey League. That's so bang on.
Miller was the goaltender, too.
Yeah,
right?
Ryan Miller down in Rochester with the Americans was there. And yeah, no, you're right on.
Pierre, why hasn't Mike Hoffman been signed yet, even to a one-year deal by somebody?
There's two guys. I've been telling you this. I can't understand Sammy Vatanen, and I can't understand Mike Hoffman. Either their demands are too extreme, or there's red flags that I'm not aware of. Obviously, everybody knows the Hoffman situation from Ottawa, but I don't know how much weight that carries down the road if he's not going to play in San Jose. But I would tell you this. I talked to a very, very high-profile agent yesterday about Vatanen because I can't understand it. I'm seeing defensemen that are getting signed that are nowhere in the same category as him. And the agent said, I'd love to hear what his demands are because that's got to be what it is. And this goes back to what we've been talking about for a very long time now is the business of hockey has changed. There's no question the business of hockey has changed for now. And once we get back on track and fans are back in the building and the revenue streams start to flow, then maybe we're going to see different kinds of contracts that we're more used to. But right now, you got to be really, really careful with your demands if you're an agent representing a player.
Yeah, I can feel the Hoffman one, Pierre, both on and off the ice. You're not looking at it and saying, wow, this guy's going to, hey, he'll score some goals. What else does he bring? But in the case of Antonin, and I look at Ottawa, and they've said to still be active, would you see him as a fit for the Ottawa Senators?
I see him as a fit for a lot of teams, not just Ottawa. I mean, he's a right-shot defenseman who can really skate. I know him personally. I know where he's from in Jyväskylä, Finland. He's just a really normal, down-to-earth guy, hard worker, really industrious, very good teammate. New Jersey traded him only because they knew his contract was coming up, and they tried to get as many picks as they could. But I would just tell you that, and then he got injured in Carolina, which was bad luck for Carolina and bad luck for him. But I think he could play on any team in the league. And I don't know if it's just because, he's out of sight, out of mind, but he's the one that I still can't understand how he's not.
Signed. Ottawa traded for Gudbranson and Josh Brown, both of whom bring a lot of
They're
toughness to the table. No, I'm not saying that. But my point is, do you see, and last year Zaitsev and Shabbat, that combo didn't work. And Simmers made the point a lot this offseason of they need to find some. They're putting $8 million a year into Shabbat.
Yep.
Get somebody who can play with him. Is Sammy Vatanen a type of player who could play well with him?
He would definitely fit with a player like that, no question about it. Sammy's used to playing with high-profile players. Sammy's used to playing high-profile minutes. He's just a very – Sean, his body of work. He's a really, really good player.
All right. Well, the town he's from in Finland, the big training facility, I know that much, but I don't know much about him.
Yeah. All I know is that you need
one of the best pizza parlors outside a rink in middle Finland is in Jyväskylä.
And I wanted to confirm when it came to Jágr, one thing I can confirm firsthand, this isn't secondhand knowledge. He and Straka at Rod Woodson Sports Bar post-game rocked a mean Pac-Man. They were on the Pac-Man game there, Pierre, for hours at a time.
I'll never forget going over to the Checo once. And Jaromir, I don't know, had just gotten into the pub business. I think he had some friends of his from his town, from Kladno, running it and going in there. And there were some of those video machines, but I just didn't know which ones they were. But now you're telling me.
That hotel was also famous with the Scouts because they have a live sex show.
Stop.
No, they did, actually. I'm being quite honest.
How do you rate that one off to David Poyle?
Well, I never attended. I'm just telling you. The Scouts loved it.
I can tell you, JR, with a clear conscience, I don't know what he's talking about.
And I believe you. All right, on that note, we'll let you go, and we'll chat again tomorrow. Thanks for the time this morning.
I look forward to it. Have a good day, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
I'm not exactly – listen, Pierre's got lots of – I'm not sure I'm totally on –
You know that he saw that sex show in Kladno, right?
Well, that wasn't what I was referring to, but absolutely.
Okay. If you go That's all the Scouts talked about. And I mean this sincerely, JR. I'd never gone, but this was always the talk of when they'd go to Scout in Kladno, live sex show in the hotel. Yeah. It was just one of those funny stories that guys would talk about.
If you go into immediate denial, that usually means you're guilty.
Exactly.
That's the way it usually It's like you always tell somebody is lying when you're face-to-face with them because their eyes get bigger.
That's
you
true.
Believe me, don't you?
When you get pulled over by the cops. That's how they know.
Yes, exactly. So did you ever try to expense that away?
No, I never went. And like I said,
I don't believe Pierre Maguire, but I believe Sean Simpson.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I have no reason to deny that. Many a sex show in Moscow, but not in Kladno.
Oh, okay. All right. So when you scouted in Moscow, how did you get that one by David? Because the last person I would think would be at a live sex show while on the road scouting for the NHL would be David Poile.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't want to confirm or deny that. Some people on the road are different people. In Stockholm, and I've told you this story before, I'd go to Cafe Opera all the time, and I remember Dick Patrick coming to me and being like, it is so cool that Simmer's going to see the opera when he's traveling. To kind of, and the one in Moscow, it was a dinner place as well, so dinner and dine and dash and do whatever else you want to do. It was called Night Flight. And so, oh, those things are pretty easy to expense. I mean, like some good scouts would say, if you're not pulling in an extra $5K on expenses on a yearly basis, you're doing a bad job. And also, I'm getting my mind going here. It's fun. I remember when we traded for Yager, and I brought that up the last thing. I remember, first of all, it was kind of, we knew he wasn't very happy to come to Washington versus going to New York. But I remember when he first showed up, and his parent, he lived with his parents. And, okay, that's fine. I don't mind that. But he was almost 30 years old. His mom cooked all his meals. He never drove a car. His dad drove him everywhere. We were kind of like,
we got to have those car talks after the games.
Yes. But he was not a happy camper. So you're going to go to Peary. We're going down the World Junior.
Well, just I wasn't quite following the logic of, you know, some players, you know, being in the NHL and therefore not going back to the World Juniors. I didn't really follow the Timmy Stützle one where he said he doesn't think he needs to go.
Well, timing is something different. And Ottawa has him penciled in lineup. So if we go back a couple of years ago.
Because he said, sorry to cut you off, but he said he's an NHL player. Well, he hasn't played an NHL game.
No, and a couple of years ago, Brady Tkachuk, when he came into camp, now he had already played in World Junior. That's fine. If you haven't penciled in on your team and actual training camp is going on to get ready for the year, okay, I kind of understand it. But for the year we've had, JR, and for these guys, and I'll say this with Hughes and Kako, like neither of these guys are out of the woods in a sense of they had really bad years. Like Hughes was, first of all, that was a mistake. He shouldn't have been playing. Kako was up and down. I'd cart these guys right to the World Junior, have them coming out feeling great. And also, if I'm the LA Kings, I'll tell you what, it'd be a real good measuring stick on Byfield as to whether or not I should send him back to Sudbury on how he does at a World Junior, right? Like, hey,
for sure.
If you don't go there and dominate, why am I bothered trying to put you in the National Hockey League? So, yeah, I'm not feeling it.
I don't think there's any question that Byfield is going. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. The other guys have played a year in the NHL. That's the difference between the two.
Yeah, for sure. But what I also just don't want, in the case of Kirby Dock or Hughes or Kako, like, I'm not talking, and if Patrice Bergeron, that was a great example. Now, Lloydie also texted me that in 05, Jason Spezza was actually almost 21 years old.
Yeah, we missed on that one.
Well, I didn't know, the texter missed. But Patrice Bergeron was playing. First of all, he went down and played in the American League the following year. And I remember do you remember Randy Burge?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a guy in just a mentality, if you think of Randy Burge as a 19-year-old, played in Boston. When he got eliminated in Boston, he drove back to Peterborough and ended up playing in the junior where it's like, hey, I'm not too good for this. He played. And I'll never forget Terry Criss. Peterborough Petes lose out to, I think, the Sioux that year, JR. He drives a full day out to Moncton to go play in the American Hockey League playoffs. Like, I don't want any of these guys, and especially those three from last year. What did they all end up with? 23, 22, 24 points. Hey, I don't need you feeling like you're some big boy here. You are treading water where, you know what, you're not. We gave you a year, but all three of you could use going to the World Junior and dominate. Don't you agree?
100%.
Like this idea that I'm carting in and I'm now a veteran player in year two. No, we gave you a year because you weren't eligible or we didn't want to send the American Hockey League.
I think that, you know, and this is a crazy year. This is an unprecedented year. We're never having to, you know, general managers are never having to think about the idea of should I make my guy available or not, like under the circumstances we have this year, ever before, and hopefully never again.
Yeah.
That being said, if there are no NHL training camps for the sake of the debate that are scheduled to open, they don't open until January 15th or whatever, after the tournament is over, there is not a doubt in my mind that every single player should be eligible.
I don't agree with
Pierre. Hey, man, if you go to this tournament, you're going to be wiped out mentally for 3 weeks. These guys haven't. These are 19-year-old kids who haven't played hockey in 10 months.
Yeah.
They'll be champing at the bit.
Yeah, and this is, and again, you have a conversation at the end of training camp, and I'll go to, say, Brennan Witt, and Brennan's 19 years old, and it's like, Brennan, here's what we're talking about, and I want you to decide, because you know so much at 19. Do you want to go back to Seattle and make $35 a week or stay here and make $1.2 million? Oh, I think I'll stay here. listen, bud, these guys don't have any clue, JR. And I know in the case of Timmy Stützle, he really wants to play. In talking to Todd Lucio, he wants to represent his country. And everyone's a little bit different. But for most of these kids, don't you want to go and hang out with your buddies and practice and be in a situation like this versus well, who knows what? You know what I mean? Just be, now an NHL training camp, a little different, but there's nothing going on. This idea, even for Lafreniere, what, you're going to sit home through Christmas and then go to training camp? This is going to prep you? No, no, no. Get your ass out there and go play in the World Junior, which should be a hell of a tournament.
It should. And again, it'll begin on Boxing Day, schedule announced last night. We'll, of course, have all the games for you right here on TSN 1200 as well. One other hockey thing we haven't touched upon this morning, mentioned it in the sports update. And this is not an unexpected move, but the organizers of the Bell Capital Cup have announced that this year's tournament has been, they're using the word postponed for now, normally held over the Christmas holidays. But of course, where we're at right now in terms of your ability just to have people, well, to play hockey, they have postponed things. They say they may look at things into the winter months or into the early spring. But also leaving the door open that the thing just be, it could be canceled altogether for 2020 and hopefully back in the Christmas holidays of 2021, which I know this is a, you know, if you're a house league player, house league parent, or even a competitive player, this is one of the big tournaments, one of the fun to play in tournaments. It's over the holidays and all that. That's a yet another thing to put on the disappointment list for 2020.
Yeah, and got to say, JR, growing up, Ottawa International and then transferred over, man, oh, man, some of the best memories outside of getting the Bob and Doug McKenzie, getting my work boots from my childhood, playing for the Gloucester Rangers in this tournament was such a big deal. And we had a really good team, ended up second in Ontario my midget year. But for those 4 years, four-time city champion, JR, I don't know if you're aware of that.
I think you've mentioned
it. Yeah, but honestly, like, I remember when this would come out, the tournament and the schedule, and just looking through it, and I remember going to watch Detroit CompuWare with Al Iafrady and Pat LaFontaine. Remember Team Finland used to come over, and I thought how cool that was with the Finnair. And also, we were in the finals twice, lost to both times. But remember when you would go into that, at least the Ottawa International, you get a jersey for it, right? And it would just have Gloucester on the back. Oh, man, some of the best memories for kids. And it just for the whole holidays. Like, it was such a big deal starting Boxing Day. So sad for a lot of kids to end up missing out on that.
Well, and again, this that's the typical time of year in which, let's say, your grandparents don't live in the same city you do, but they come to visit family for the holidays, right? They come and they go to the games and everything. Like, it's just a great family event and everything. So unfortunate, but again, not unexpected news yesterday regarding this year's Bell Capital Cup. All right, 8:49. We'll look at this day in sports history and sports birthdays next hour in depth, but I wanted to mention kind of the one big event that happened on this day back in 1992. So we're talking 28 years ago. It is Game 3 of the World Series, first ever time a World Series game was played outside of the United States. It was in Toronto. Of course, Blue Jays and the Atlanta Braves were tied at one game apiece. We're going to take you to one of the most controversial and, well, if they had instant replay, would have been one of those overturned calls in World Series history.
First pitch to Justice. Well hit the center field. Devon White racing back to the warning track. Great catch up against the wall. And the runners passed each other. Pendleton went by Sanders. He has already been called out. Now they have Sanders in a rundown with a chance for a triple play. Gruber did not get him. Sanders made it back to second. Gruber insisting to Bob Davidson that he made the tag, but the umpire does not agree, and they came within inches of a triple play.
Yeah, came within inches, or he actually did tag him. That was a missed call by old Blue in that situation. Kelly Gruber diving, got him there right on the heel. It was actually not that. The umpy should have had that call, but missed it. What would have been the second triple play in World Series history.
It was all glory for Kelly Gruber, too. He wanted that third out. Manny Lee's right there. You got him in a rundown. The only thing I worry about, though, if Manny Lee doesn't get that tag, and I think he would have, is I don't see anybody behind Gruber. I don't see – would have been Candy Maldonado in left field at that in 92?
That's nice.
Or is that 93?
You're just throwing that name out there just to look cool.
No,
I'm in
Candy.
The, by the way, you guys aren't even Jays fans like I am, because it was 30 years ago. First of all, do you remember the Devon White trade that brought him to Toronto?
Like you that, just looked
that,
this up.
No, I didn't. Oh my God, that's terrible you bring up that name. But who would have forgot when Junior Felix and Luis Soho?
Okay, just stop. just stop right now. By the way, I am in the left field stands for this game.
Oh, and you don't even know
that.
Right.
And I don't remember that Candy Maldonado was playing left. I'm going to believe
Candy
you
was a bit
said.
Chunky,
that's
wasn't
a,
he?
That is
I would assume he's DH'ing. You
Candy,
got him. You got him out in the field.
Did
Gruber end up winning MVP that year as well?
No, Pat Borders.
No.
Pat Borders, that's right. Oh, man.
Pat Borders in year one, and I think Molitor in year two, right?
Yeah.
Of the two championships. But that was 28 years ago today. I still remember kind of being in there, and that was, of course, the game after the upside-down flag and down in Atlanta, and how much pride there was in singing "O Canada" before that game. And again, just being a part of history. That was a pretty cool event to be at, living in Toronto back in the day. But that was 28 years ago. The Blue Jays, by the way, went on to win that game and, of course, win the World Series.
Yeah, six. And sending those people in Atlanta on notice that 4 years later, I guess Donovan Bailey showing up, winning a little gold medal action. And
right back at
that,
you
that
again,
brings
Atlanta.
A lot. Well, and also after 88, we felt a little bit bad. But, yeah, any of those little Canadian things and not getting respect, which I don't think the President of the United States has a lot of respect for us right now. So things have not changed a whole lot in 28 years in the United States.
All right. We'll do more of this day in sports history coming up in an hour or so. Tom Caron, who is the host of Major League Baseball or Red Sox games on NESN, the New England Sports Network, is going to join us in the next hour. We're going to talk some World Series. Game one goes tonight between the Rays and the Dodgers. When we come back, we'll touch on last night's two Monday Night Football games and much more as we roll on here for a Tuesday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. What a battle of the Titans that's going to be. I can't believe the Eagles win that game. They'll be in first place. But such is the NFC least this year after the Cowboys got crushed last night by the Cardinals. Got some texts coming in at 12-1200. Ryan writes, love the World Junior talk, boys. We just canceled our tickets. Now I'll be watching in my own bubble at home. That comes from Ryan. And, of course, yeah, this is going to be a bubble tournament this year. But what they've said to the folks out in Edmonton and Red Deer is that, you know, everything being equal, if we're back to a somewhat healthy environment, that those two cities will host next year's World Junior.
Well, and for the money that Hockey Canada or whoever does the bid puts up, boy, you better host it, because that's big money, right, that they guarantee to Hockey Canada, to the double IHF. So, yeah, you want to have it back. And, hey, big part of the economics of the World Ice Hockey Federation and for Hockey Canada.
JR, we are actually on the field for that Joe Carter game, or is that yet another of your tall tales? That is not a tall tale. And in fact, not only was he on the field for that game,
good text,
I was actually dressed up as Kelly Gruber and made
nice.
The tag for that triple play.
Who
if nice locks.
I'm kind of trying to get a visual. If he's a baseball player, I feel in more like a Randy Johnson look. Just because you're tall.
The tall lefty. Yeah. Without quite the 99 mile an hour heater.
Well, just, but if you're, yeah, I mean, you're a large, like, what other baseball, like, if I say to you, hey, JR,
yeah,
who do you look like? And I don't mean facially, because Randy's an ugly fella. just from a height standpoint, tall and lean. Like,
yeah.
Were you thinking baseball history here? You must have a guy. Hammer, come on, you're the baseball guy. Who
would
you say
that JR would look like?
Yeah, like who would JR? Who would you say? Like, is he back to like Steve Carlton? Yeah, I'm
Steve
the one.
Carlton.
No,
he was
no,
tall,
not even close to Steve Carlton. Long, lanky,
little big lefty. I'm a lefty.
I'm thinking more of a bullpen catcher kind of guy. I'm thinking here.
No, he's got to be a middle reliever. That's the most anonymous.
Reliever.
Those are the most
brought
anonymous.
In a high leverage situation. I can only come in for one out.
Who is the
one out?
When Tom Wanky, or was it, what was it?
Hanky.
Hanky.
Yep.
But
mm-hmm.
Okay, you just lost all credibility.
No, I know.
For any baseball
but
talk that you can bring to the table.
I'm bringing a strong one. His setup man before that was
Dwayne Ward.
Was Timlin, wasn't it?
Dwayne
no.
Ward.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Timlin wasn't
until 93. Timlin was, no, Timlin got the last out in 92.
But he was middle relief before he became the reliever when Hanky left, right?
They actually started as a starter,
oh, okay.
Timlin,
okay.
And then was a
bullpen
guy.
That was strong
in
eh?
The playoffs.
Ooh, Jay Fern thinks I'm like a young Charlie Liebrand. That's not a bad
thing. Oh.
Charlie Liebrand is kind of lanky. Lefty.
I'd like you to have one of the big stashes going too. Roly fingers.
By the way, Dave Winfield was the DH in '92, and
okay.
Jay Fern also says that Candy Maldonado actually caught the last out in the championship series in '92.
Nice
in left field.
Left
so
field.
There
oh, against
wow.
the A's.
Yeah,
that was a blowout with Juan Guzman on the bump.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
No, I don't have that one. That's,
like that?
That's good.
I think the final was 8-3.
All right. JR is a tall Bartolo Colon.
Oh. Again, if he was a foot taller, he wouldn't be fat.
Hey?
Right?
A foot?
All right. We're going to talk some baseball. Tom Caron, who hosts baseball coverage on NESN. One of the questions I'm going to have for Tom, in fact, the first question is, why did the Red Sox trade Mookie Betts exactly?
Yeah.
We're talking about a team with a humongous budget. And I understand he wanted max dollars and ends up getting him for the Dodgers. But watching him hit and play the field like he does for L.A., What a crazy, crazy trade that ends up being.
Do you think it was a David Price effect? I mean, they have. I know that over the years they've won, but man, they have bombed out on some free agents as well, including Mr. Price, and unloading that contract, right, was part of it.
We will, we'll set up the World Series with Tom Caron coming up. Dodgers and Rays, get it started tonight. This day in sports history, and as well, we'll celebrate some sports birthdays. By the way, congrats to Gemma. She was our 27th caller, and Gemma, good luck tomorrow. In the daily draw for $100 in Gabriel Pizza gift certificates, your next chance to qualify comes up on In the Box between 10 and 2. Update coming. Latest news from 580 CFRA. Run down the scoreboard for you as the Cardinals and the Chiefs win the Monday night games. And we're going to come back, talk some baseball when we return on TSN 1200.